from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to the Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting Summer at the Palladium now through August.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll talk with artist Douglas David about what it is like to paint the Indiana State Fair.
I'll find out about the Lincoln Highway Road Rally.
And I'll get a preview of the upcoming World Championships for Drum Corps International. And of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call...
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Impressionist landscape painter Douglas David has often included cows in his pasture scenes, but never quite to the same extent as he has now for his new show that uses the State Fair as his subject matter. Not only is the fair his subject matter, but it's been his studio for the past few months and will be his gallery during the month of August. The project is titled Douglas David Paints From Farm to Fair. Travis DiNicola spoke with Douglas as well as with Sarah Davis and Andy Klotz from the State Fair.
Douglas, we're going to start with you. This is kind of a big deal. That's a part of a big deal. We were just saying on before we went on the air how big of a deal the State Fair is, and of course it is. But you are the artist of the State Fair.
I am this year
with Paints Farm to Fair, an exhibit that you're doing at the Normandy Barn during the duration of the State Fair. Tell me about this project, how it got started, and what exactly it means.
Well, you know, last year I was actually, my father was in the hospital. He had a triple heart bypass here in Indianapolis. He did very well, but we ended up, he was in for a while. And so I ended up at the State Fair quite often in the evenings because, you know, when you have folks in the hospital, you go a little stir crazy. So I ended up back... you know, several nights, and I just thought, God, this would be so great to paint this, you know, all the visuals that are here, all the color and all the excitement and the energy. And I was actually talking to Justin Armstrong with the State Fair, and I said, you know, we need to have a show. So in the fall, we, after the fair was over, we kind of got together and we talked about it, and we put the proposal together, and we actually, we got a wonderful grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Congratulations on that.
Yeah. Thank you.
So this is a show, is it featuring all new work you've created at the State Fair as well as existing work, or it's a mix, or,
yes,
it's all new?
It's actually new. There were maybe a couple pieces because of the marketing materials we had to get in the program back in like March. There was a piece that I used that was from last summer, but I think there's three that were existing, and there's 61.
And so all work inspired by the State Fair, but you've actually been working at the fairgrounds?
I've actually been painting in one of the barns, yeah.
How cool is that?
Oh, it was very fun. You
or know? Cold was that when...
Well, it was cold when I started in March, but and then it's really, really hot, especially today. I mean, it was really hot in there. But, an empty barn, and I would just pull up, and, you know, on nice days I'd have the door open, and it was kind of like a studio away from the studio, because to do 60 paintings in since March... was pretty intense, so I had to just kind of, I would just get away some days for an hour or two, some days I was there for eight, some days early, some days late.
Now, many people know your work, just beautiful impressionistic landscapes. Often you fill them with cows anyway, so that is a nice connection to the fair. But, I mean, what sort of subject matter are you dealing with at the State Fairgrounds? Is it all scenes from the fair or of the grounds?
Both. We have, I think, about 36 pieces that are fair-related, and they're actually little vignettes, a lot of figure. Mm-hmm. You know, people getting a vanilla, what was that one called, a vanilla whip, or you know, the little ice cream cones, or what is the other thing, you know, like, you know, a corn dog, just people grabbing a corn dog, just simple little things. But what happened, the idea of this, the concept was from farm to fair, so it's agriculturally related, so it's large fields and cows and sheep and pigs and chickens and all the different ag groups are pretty much represented, and it's pretty much my interpretation. So you know how my stuff has kind of got that soft, you know, simple brushwork.
Beautiful light, very soft lines.
Yeah, we paired it with then these little 16-inch squares of the fair, and it's the way we've hung it and designed the exhibit it's really, there's these six areas of energy within this large field of farm and agriculture.
And Sarah, you've been working on hanging this exhibit, mm-hmm. right? Is that correct?
We officially hung them today.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's probably going to be a little moving, tweaking.
Now, we're recording a couple weeks out from the fair, so
right.
you guys are still getting ready for everything.
Right.
But
we are... We tried to balance it out so that your eye would be drawn in, and I think it turned out really well. It's a few power pieces that are intense, paired with the small pieces of lots of energy, lots of color, and it's just a little bit of everything.
Now, is this the first time, Ray, that there's been this type of work with an artist to have an artist? I'm sorry.
Andy,
that's
all right. I threw you a curveball today, Travis, by showing up.
And back in 3, 2, 1. Andy, is this the first time that that there's been an artist featured like this throughout the fair?
In this capacity, it certainly has been, at least in recent memory. We have had a couple of other. We've really tried to emphasize the arts more at the fair in recent years in different ways. And in fact, although. This exposition is going to be something that's really unique. We've actually got another sculpture, too, that's going to be at the fair that is a great piece of work from J. Seward Johnson, who is well known for his sculptures around the world. And this is the second year we've brought in a very dynamic piece of public art like that. It'll be a 20-foot sculpture near the 4-H complex for people who are familiar with the fairgrounds.
Fantastic, yeah.
And that will be, again, something that we think maybe not everybody thinks about, that maybe not the mm-hmm. typical fairgoer thinks about. But this particular exhibit that Douglas has put together is just certainly going to even bring that home a little bit more, that that you do have an agricultural presence in art, and we're focusing on that at the fair this year.
Now, you got a lot of great events that are tied in with this. That's going to make a lot of fun. Of course, the exhibit is open from the 5th through the 21st throughout the fair, but your opening reception, Douglas, is on Thursday the 11th?
Yes, that's where I'll be there to meet the public and talk about my work. And, you know, it's going to be interesting because it's an opening reception in the middle of the show.
But,
you know, sometimes you do that. I've heard they even sometimes will close the show with a reception. But,
yeah.
So this is going to be fun.
Very good. And then what I'm really intrigued about is the painting, the Indiana State Fair that you're doing, sort of a day painting with you. Is that correct? And
yeah, I'm actually doing a little painting class.
Sort of a studio class or an outside class,
yeah.
I guess.
It's pretty limited. So I think we already have some reservations. So
mm-hmm.
what we'll do is that morning we'll have some little lecture. It'll be actually in the hall where my paintings are, which will be kind of fun on, you know, banquet tables, and then we will kind of overview the principles that I always teach in my landscape classes, and then we'll go out and paint the fair that afternoon, and then we come back in, and I think we'll have like probably a lemonade and a little bit of a, I like to end with a little show of what you've done that day. It kind of
mm-hmm.
recaps the day. So that'll be fun.
Awesome. Now, and space is limited for that. So I do want to encourage people, if you are interested in that, go to artsanctuaryindiana.com for more information on that. Douglas, tell me about Nora Spitznagel's involvement with this.
We
all love Nora and know her through
Nora.
Many, many ways.
Nora
but,
and I have been friends for years, and, you know, I kept saying last year.
So how'd you rope her into this?
Well, you know what? She goes to the fair every day. Every day she's hanging out. You know, we're still trying mm-hmm. to figure out what all she does over there at the fair.
Hey, you don't have to sound like that's such a strange thing.
No, it's a wonderful thing, you know?
Yes, it is.
I'm always intrigued in what all she does every day. So last year I said, hey, we got to get together, and we went to that sideshow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we ate some ribs. We walked to the entire fairgrounds.
Sure, Blue Monkey Sideshow.
Oh,
yeah.
I love that show. Mm-hmm. And so what we did was we kind of brainstormed. I said, you know, Nora, I've got to have a show here. This is the thing. I mean, we've got to create an event, and this is a fun thing. So I introduced her to Justin, and
mm-hmm.
we wrote the grant together. So.
Okay. And Nora's going to be blogging throughout.
Yes, it's already mm-hmm. started.
Has already started, and it's Farm to Fair Blogspot, where yes. she is blogging about all this.
Yes, it's slow. It's slowly started, and it'll build up toward the fair, the way I understand she's going to do it. Of course, you know, when she's there every day, I'm sure it's going to be an everyday entry. So there were a few entries back in the winter when I was painting,
mm-hmm.
and basically she kind of talks about memories of her interpretations of the fair, much like my interpretations through my painting, it'll be through her writing. And then in the actual exhibit, then we'll have some of those connections. Sarah's actually can tell a little more about how that's going to work.
Sure.
Right. Well, Nora's been sending me texts in the past few days, and she's been writing away. We're going to try and tell little stories for, you know, throughout the exhibit for each of the larger paintings. I don't think we've decided on how many yet, but there's going to be little excerpts for people to read, and they're kind of fun little blurbs about, you know, how soy turns into food for animals that turn into, you know, our corn dogs, or, you know, how soy turns into food for our cows that turn, you know, into milkshakes, and how we can support all of our farmers by going out and buying those things at the fair and buying them to eat around here from Indiana farmers. So,
and buying art from a local artist
and
as well.
Buying art.
I'm assuming all this is for sale, right?
Yes, it will be for sale.
Okay, okay, so, very good.
But you know, the fun thing about this, I want to jump in for a minute on this food, the endowment grant that we got is Food for Thought, and it's the, from what I understand,
which ties in with the Indiana Humanities Council's Food for Thought program.
Yes, it's the kind of, I think the kind of the summation of that program. I think it's been running for maybe 3 years.
I think this is the second year for
that.
Is it
the second year?
Second or third.
Okay, but what's so great about it is that it really kind of allows us as creatives to draw our interpretation of from field to table, you know, so from farm to fair. It's kind of fun to see, you know, the roadmap of how it gets there. So,
is pretty much, I mean, is there some something edible or food related in all of the paintings as subject matter in one way or another?
At least in the small fair paintings, pretty much. I mean, there's some. I had to put the tractor parade in with those kooky women in those outfits, you know, I mean, with parasols, you know, in the middle of the fair. You got to see some of that stuff, you know, because there's just, there's culture.
So what was the most surprising thing, Douglas, you found yourself painting as part of this?
Oh, wow. Well, I have never painted chickens. We have some chickens and some pigs.
Uh-huh.
You know? You know, of course, we have cows, you know that. Uh-huh. We have some great pasture and some soybeans and corn and different things. I think what was interesting was painting the people at the fair, because it's, for me, you know, I'm kind of getting into some figure. It's not portraits, so it's not, you know, representational of, you know, oh, there's Travis.
Right.
But
right.
It's figure. Now, if you can tell your body type, you might be able to pick yourself out. See? So that was kind of fun. And there's just a lot of, there's gesture, you know, a lot of the old stuff I was taught at, you know, back in art school, the gesture, and you can tell what people are saying. It was really fun when I named them, you know, because the
and
name.
Put the stories with them in your mind, yeah.
Yeah, the names, when they name the painting and what's going on, that's kind of fun. I always love those little things that have a lot of meanings, you know. You'll say, you know, it's like a, like you've eavesdropped on a conversation between somebody, and you think that's what they're saying. Well, like I told you, you know.
Well, and everyone says that the fair is the best place for people watching.
Oh,
so
incredible people,
you know, certainly that's what you've had a chance to do. Andy, I'm going to give you sort of the last word on the fair, because in addition to this fantastic exhibit that I can't wait to see with Douglas David, there's certainly many, many, many other things going on. I know that it's almost impossible to give a brief account of everything, but what are a couple of highlights you do want to mention?
Well, first of all, I would just want to tie in with what Sarah talked about earlier, that the representation of soy, because this is the year of soybeans, and that's an inspiration behind a lot of things that will be happening at the fair, and we are celebrating soybeans. It's a very important crop for our state, and we are a national leader with that, so we are happy to be doing that. But some other cultural experiences that people will find will be this Germany exhibit. This is the second year we've had an international featured exhibit, and we are going to be celebrating Germany as well in this Welcome to Germany exhibit that will be in the International Pavilion. And I think people will be just as happy with this one as they were with the feature that we had on Japan last year. So that will be throughout the fair. There will
that
be a number
That sounds really
of
cool.
Things.
Of course, there's German-related food and cultural events and a life-size gingerbread house.
All kinds of things that you think. And I have come to find out that more than half of all Hoosiers have German ancestry. So I really think there will be a lot of interest.
Sure.
And I would also recommend that people stop by and see the Stars of the Peking Acrobats. They will be very near that Time for Fun sculpture over in the northwest corner of the fairgrounds.
I've heard they're amazing.
They will put on three shows a day that people will be mesmerized with their talents. So that'll be another thing to see.
Awesome, awesome. Well, and of course, there's lots of great entertainment, and then the Midway, and then all the food and exhibits, and just so many wonderful things. So
there are, and we're a 17-day fair. We've expanded to those 17 days just a couple years ago, and we are now continuing on. And August 5th through the 21st are the dates, and people can find out how to plan their own day at the fair by visiting our website at indianastatefair.com.
Excellent. Well, I wish you the best of luck. I know you won't have a lot of work to do before the fair opens, so I appreciate you coming out to Art of the Matter today. Thank you all so much.
Thanks very much.
Travis DiNicola with artist Douglas David and Sarah Davis and Andy Klotz from the Indiana State Fair. Douglas's show, Douglas David Paints from Farm to Fair, runs during the fair, surprise, from August 5th through the 21st in the Normandy Barn. For more information, visit IndianaStateFair.com, IndianaStateFair.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Long before the Federal Highway Act of 1956 created what we still use as our modern interstate freeway system, the Lincoln Highway was the first transcontinental system, conceived in 1913 with a newfangled motor car expressly in mind. One of the great automotive marketers, Indiana's own Carl Fisher, got behind the idea and it took off. And if he sounds familiar, it's because he's the brain behind the development of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and of Miami Beach. Indiana Landmarks has joined forces with the Indiana Lincoln Highway Association, the Studebaker National Museum, and downtown South Bend to create the Lincoln Highway Adventure 2011, coming up August 5th and 6th in northern Indiana. Sharon invited Indiana Landmarks' Todd Zeiger to tell us more.
All right, so I want to know, first of all, we're going to talk about the adventure, but I want to know about the Lincoln Highway. Where did the idea come from? What is our portion of it? How did we manage to get a portion of it would be a good question, too.
Well, the Lincoln Highway was the first paved transcontinental highway in the United States, and the Indiana connection, which is really interesting, is Carl Fisher, and Fisher, for Indianapolis enthusiasts, of course, know from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, but he was known for his promotional his ability to promote things, and he saw the need to promote a way to get across the country on a paved road. So the Indiana-Lincoln Highway is the nation's first kind of coast-to-coast paved road, and one of the early promoters of that was an Indiana native, Carl Fisher.
And when was this dreamed up, and how long did it take to build, and what were some of the obstacles?
Well, the first route that kind of works through Indiana is the 1913 route that comes through South Bend and LaPorte and down through Valparaiso on over to the Illinois state line. And then later on, they straightened it out, and they came through what we now know as U.S. 30, but it came more southern and went through kind of Plymouth and on over to Fort Wayne that way. And so it survived for many years and had many iterations across the United States. There are Lincoln Highway chapters across the United States, and several sections of the route have actually been recognized as national scenic byways, national byways, state roads. And we're working on that in Indiana. So the Lincoln Highway was promoted for many, many years up until the time the United States started to kind of standardize the marking systems for roads across the country.
Which wasn't until what, the middle of the last century?
Yeah, late 20s, really, early 30s. They started to come up with marking systems for the roads by numbers to more to help travelers go across the country. But I think what people have to understand with regard to Lincoln Highway and why it's so pioneering at the time, at that time, rural roads were really just connectors between hubs to get people from the farms and outlying areas to maybe the train station or the county market in the city. And so this notion of connecting cities to cities across the country was very far thinking. And there really weren't any paved roads at the turn of the century. And so this whole notion of paving a road from coast to coast was very far thinking and transformed the way people traveled and connected between cities.
What were some of the obstacles in Indiana to getting our portion built? I mean, Carl Fisher certainly was a marketing and promotions genius, and I'm sure worked around a lot of those obstacles. But doesn't this involve buying up some formerly private land by the government?
It may have, you know, I don't know a lot about that aspect of it, but I can tell you that they were able to knit together the route using roads that were already in kind of in existence by kind of marking them and putting up what would be the Lincoln Highway markers. There are concrete markers that they set that went across to help people get from point A to point B. So some of the Lincoln Highway, especially early on, was knitting together roads that already existed in a way to help people get from coast to coast. And then, yes, they would definitely have to, you know, get roads from either cities or towns, states, as they started to pave new sections and create ideal sections. They would definitely have to do that. I'm not an expert on that aspect of the road.
Sure. So let's talk about this, and this is the inaugural year for the Lincoln Highway Adventure. How did you come up with this idea, you and your collaborators?
So, yeah, this was the Lincoln Highway Adventure is something that I've wanted to do through our office for a long time. And in conversations with the Indiana Lincoln Highway Association, which is the chapter that's promoting the route in Indiana, they were thinking about the same thing. And so as we just started talking, we decided that we could really make this into something that is very interesting for people to help them explore the whole byway. This year we're starting from South Bend and going over to the Illinois line. And then the idea is to build on this then next year and go from South Bend over to the Ohio state line. And then the year after, which we're building towards, is the centennial of the Lincoln Highway, which is 2013, to do a kind of a whole route. And so the adventure is a way for people to explore this byway and see the National Register towns and the vintage architecture, the roadside architecture. There's actually an ideal section of road in the western part of the state over in the Dyer area.
Really?
And
in what way is it ideal?
When they were building the Lincoln Highway, they wanted to have a way for people to see what their vision was. I mean, as I said, most roads were just unpaved gravel messes, and people didn't really know what that vision was. So they created this ideal section to show what this highway could look like, and that was over in Dyer, Indiana. It was a paved section of road that represented what they saw as the ideal section of what the Lincoln Highway would look like. And part of that road segment is still there, and it's marked. It's part of what is now current modern U.S. 30, the actual road bed is gone. But what's great about the Highway Adventure, the Lincoln Highway Adventure, is that there are original portions of roadbed that do still exist. And as part of the adventure, we have marked those out for people, and by giving them turn-by-turn directions, they'll be able to actually see original sections of roadbed that still exist, and they'll be able to drive on that and get a real sense of, you know, what the size of the road was, the width, and kind of the feel of what it would be like to drive the Lincoln Highway at that time.
And what it was like to be, in essence, a pioneer, because this is, as you said, way before people thought nothing of just hopping in their car and going across several states.
Oh, yeah. One of the fun things to do if people are interested in seeing what this was like, it's hard for us to put our minds in that time frame because, like you say, we're so used to just jumping in our car and, you know, driving to wherever we want to go. And the whole notion of traveling by car in 1913 was a completely different experience. It took hours to go short distances. You had to carry supplies and parts and tires and become very adept at digging yourself out of the mud because they often would get stuck. And so if you ever do a search about, you know, Lincoln Highway photos, there's a great collection up in Michigan. And you see these people, these pioneers, as you said, who are in these open-air cars, and they're just traversing these muddy roads. And that's what Fisher and his cohorts were trying to get around, was to fix that problem, because it was definitely a pioneer adventure to go on a car trip from city to city back then. And our adventure surely won't involve mud. I say it's all the fun without the mud. We're hoping to engage people and show them that this is a great way to experience kind of northern Indiana, several National Register districts. We have over 65 sites that are going to be included in the guidebook, along with tours and tidbits from both the tourist handbooks in the past that would give tourist tips. And so we're going to include some of those, both from the historic guidebooks as well as new ones, to kind of modern it up a little bit.
Do you have a favorite tip?
It's probably not good to check in at Foursquare and drive at the same time, so that's probably a pretty good tip. I don't have a favorite one at the time, but, you know, they would talk about having enough gas along, you know, so you can get from point A to point B, and tires and spare parts, and Just good travel tips. I don't have them in front of me. I should have grabbed those before we got on the line.
Actually, the go ahead.
One thing I would like to mention, and if we can work it in some way, one of the exciting things I think we're doing with this adventure that hasn't been done before is we really are employing a lot of the social media and technology of today to engage people in this adventure. The Lincoln Highway and their promoters were about, you know, technology and building the new road and headlights. That was Fisher's, of course, claim to fame. So we will be setting up Foursquare check-ins, a variety of these historic sites for people to check into and post their experiences. Of course, on Facebook, we'll be encouraging people before and after, obviously not while you're driving, to check in at Facebook, post your pictures, and share your experiences about the road. And so we're going to be engaging a variety of social media as part of this adventure to help people, you know, be a part of this trip and experience these different places along the route.
Well, of course, if you have a car full of people, the driver can still drive and the other person can be checking in on Foursquare.
That's our advice. Yes,
yeah.
We don't want the driver to be doing it, but the registration for this event is per car, and we don't care how many people you pile into it. That's great, and you know, come along and enjoy that adventure with your friends and that sort of thing, and go on down the road. So we really encourage folks to fill up their car and take an adventure with their friends.
Now, you're especially encouraging vintage cars. Modern cars are allowed?
Absolutely. And cool. Anybody that drives a vintage 1986 Ford Aerostar gets a free one. Vintage cars now are 25 years old by the state of Indiana, so you can do the
math. That's all?
Oh, no. 1986 is now considered a vintage car. And
oh,
so anyone driving 1986 vintage cars, we're going to give them a special award. But, yeah, vintage cars, we're really encouraging that because we think it's kind of fun to have that combination of people driving their old cars and the road itself. But any minivan, family cruiser, whatever you'd like to drive, we welcome you. I actually had a guy today call me, and he wants the guidebook because he wants to do it on his bike. I'm like, wow, that's pretty fun.
Oh, wow. Rugged.
So, you know, it could kind of a long ride, but, you know, we can break it up.
And you have a vintage car in your life that we'll find you in on this adventure?
I am looking for one to borrow. Mine is not yet roadworthy. I do have a vintage car, but it's not yet roadworthy for this adventure, but hopefully in a few years it will be.
By 2013, that's your goal for the centennial.
That's my goal. That's what I'll tell my wife.
Tell your wife if you're spending more hours in the garage, it's because you have a goal that WFYI set you to.
That's right. Really, I mean, I have to spend this money to get my car ready for 2013.
Sharon Gamble with Todd Zeiger of Indiana Landmarks. You can learn more about the Lincoln Highway Adventure 2011 at indianalandmarks.org or at lincolnhighwayadventure11.eventbrite.com. Either way, indianalandmarks.org or lincolnhighwayadventure11.eventbrite.com.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
I don't know if you know this or not, but in the last month, the number of minutes of daylight...
It is starting to shrink a little bit.
It's shrinking by like 49 minutes.
Even though we're like in the middle of summer, the days are getting shorter. I can't stand it. Anyway.
So make the most out of what's left of summer and
join
us for some of the events we have on our calendar that we call
What do we do
with those... diminishing sunlight?
Make use of every minute you have.
Right.
You know, we had Douglas David on earlier. We've got other shows that are going to be featuring different events and things going on with the state fair coming up, of course, soon. But something you can plan on now. This is with Storytelling Arts of Indiana. They are calling all fibbers for the Storytelling Arts of Indiana 3rd Annual Liars Contest, and it's taking place at the State Fair in August. If you are a liar or want to be or think you are, I'm not even sure what that means. They are having this contest for anyone who wants to spin a tall tale in the Pioneer Village at the fairgrounds on Friday, August 5th. Registration begins that night at 6 p.m. The contest begins at 7. There are cash prizes and awards and ribbons and all that stuff for those who can craft the biggest lie. All ages are invited to tell a lie. No experience is necessary, though I'm sure some of you have some. there's categories for adult and youth and under. You'll be judged on your technique and story development and originality and effectiveness and working with the audience. And, well, there you go. It should be just a ton of fun. If you want to get more information, go to storytellingarts.org or just show up and tell your lies.
Pants on fire optional.
Ha ha ha!
Vienna is a cool place to be, and if you go out to Symphony on the Prairie this Saturday night, you can experience an evening in old Vienna. And of course, old is spelled with an E on the end because, you know, it's cooler that way. Conductor Eugene Sagan and pianist Grace Fong will be featured. Grace Fong, of course, the 2010 American Pianist Association Crystal DeHaan Classical Fellow. On the program, works by Johann Strauss Jr., the Overture to Die Fledermaus, and the Mozart Piano Concerto No. 9 in E-flat, Kirkel 271. So take some cooling food or beverage with you to Symphony on the Prairie this Saturday night.
That sounds delightful.
Yes.
Another fun concert that's coming up pretty soon, Friday, August 5th at Radio Radio down in Fountain Square. Kate Lamont, just a delightful singer and pianist, and she's going to be performing with Devin Ashley, Dickie Fox, and Joshua Silbert. You may remember a while back Kate was in an accident when she was down in Austin with South by Southwest, and there were some fundraisers and stuff for her. She's doing much better, and this is one of the first concerts that she'll be doing now that she's doing much better. So it's a great chance to come out and hear some great local music at Radio Radio, Friday the 5th at 10 p.m.
That is great, getting back into the performing groove. Speaking of groovy, Peace Train and the Flower Power Brass, what a combination, will be performing rock and roll hits from the late 60s and 1970s. So break out your tie-dye and maybe some puka shell beads. Oh, it worries me that I know about that. And go to Concerts on the Canal at the Indiana History Center this coming Thursday, August 4th in the evening for a nice, nice evening of fun music and a little trip down musical memory lane.
Very cool. Hey, just want to give sort of a shout out to a local artist, Nick Allman. You may know his work. He's been exhibited at Christopher West Presents a number of times. Christopher West Presents is located on Mass Ave. Nick's work involves these really cool sort of furniture pieces that look like they're coming out of the wall, like being ripped out of the wall, whether they're a lighting fixture or a shelf or things, and they make use of the physical space itself. He is being shown in an exhibit called Six Rooms, with at the Friedman Benda Gallery in New York City on 26th Street.
That's great.
Through August, which is very cool, thanks to his work with Chris West, which is awesome. So if you happen to be traveling in New York at all, anytime between now and August 6th, check out that gallery on West 26th Street and see one of our great local artists, or just check out Nick's work, either Christopher West Presents or at his studio, which is located in the Circle City Industrial Complex.
Awesome. Speaking of local artists, if you haven't heard about this, you should know about this. There are more cool new bus shelters. They're eco-friendly bus shelters, custom designed by the Indianapolis-based architect Donna Sink. And they're it's been announced they'll be fabricated and installed along the cultural trail. And each shelter is going to feature a poem written by a published poet who has ties to Indiana. It's all part of the Moving Forward project. And the poets include Michael L.H. Douglas, whose poem Circle, Chorus will be at Washington Street just west of Illinois. Also, Micah Ling's Settlement, Washington Street outside the Eitel-Jorgen State Museums. Also, Vienna Wagner's Art with a Heart at Mass Ave at Walnut and Park. And finally, Jenny Brown's Our Street in Endless Circles at Mass Ave east of College next to the Art Bank. So expect that construction to get started kind of soon. And make sure you pop inside and read the poems when those get up.
Delightful.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, something I'm really excited about. Cirque du Soleil is coming back to Woo-hoo! Indianapolis. They'll be here next week at Conseco Fieldhouse, August 3rd through the 7th. And the show that they're bringing this time is really cool. It's called Dralion, and it is sort of a combination of Cirque du Soleil with ancient Chinese acrobatic arts. In fact, it's very specifically fusing the 3,000-year-old tradition of Chinese acrobatic arts and taking its inspiration from Eastern philosophy. And what it basically does is sort of bringing together the idea of the dragon, symbolizing the East, and the lion, symbolizing the West. That's why you get Dralion, or however it's pronounced, like dragon and lion, D-R-A-L-I-O-N. And then it uses the four elements, and each element takes on a different form and is performed as part of the Cirque du Soleil performance. Very, very cool. So you got air, water, fire, and earth, of course. And this is August 3rd through the 7th at Conseco.
That sounds pretty flamboyant and amazing.
Well,
yeah.
And Cirque du Soleil is always just, you know, cool stuff.
I mean,
really just, you know, beautiful costumes and amazing acrobatic and circus work.
Great things to go and say. How do they ever do that?
Hey,
the Notables is a new swing and jazz band that's appearing in concert at the Opera House Inn. Are you ready for a little trivia question?
Okay.
The persimmon capital of the world. It's a town in our state.
Really?
It's Mitchell, Indiana.
I have no idea.
The Opera House there this Saturday night, that's July 30th at 8 o'clock, you can hear the Notables, and they play swing and dance standards, but with new stylish renditions of music by people like Glenn Miller, Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Tommy, and Jimmy Dorsey, and as they say, much, much more.
This is going to be really fun. Primary Colors has a gallery now called the Primary Gallery, which is located down in Fountain Square on Virginia Avenue. And their next exhibit, which is opening on August 5th for First Friday, is titled Circle of Champions, and it features the work of previous winners of the Art versus Art painting competition.
Art versus Art.
Thank you, Sharon.
That's a chainsaw.
Well done. So Amory Abbott, Ryan Alvis, Mab Graves, Emma Overman, Dane Sauer, and Chris Sickles are all going to be featured. And unlike the regular Art versus Art thrilling main event that takes place in September, no art will be destroyed during this show. We'll be back when there's even less minutes in the day next week on that calendar we call.
What will we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Known as marching music's major league, the World Championships for Drum Corps International take place at Lucas Oil Stadium from August 11th through the 13th, and this year also includes a parade on Saturday the 13th celebrating the arts in Indianapolis. Travis DiNicola spoke with Dan Atchison, Executive Director and CEO of Drum Corps International, and with Color Guard performer Leanne Fields and baritone player Joseph Burrell, both of the Crossman Drum Corps.
Dan, let's start with you. You're the executive director and CEO of Drum Corps International, which is marching music's major league, as you like to say. Give me a bit of background on what DCI is, because you guys have been in Indianapolis now a couple years as your home.
Yeah, it's actually been 3 years since 2008 now, and we're happy to be here. It's been a great ride so far, and we look forward to a lot of years being here. But Drum Corps International is the governing body and event management organization, nonprofit, that supports 105 events in the summertime and the organizations that participate in them, known as Drum and Bugle Corps, just amazing marching musical organizations. And there's a lot of organization and detail that goes into putting these extraordinary performances
105.
Together. Yes, sir.
I mean, and
in an eight-week period.
Yeah, like sort of mid-late June, like basically now when we're recording this.
Right.
Until the World Championships take place here in Indy the second week of August.
Right, right.
Wow.
Yeah, my co-guests here are going to be in probably 30 shows and travel 15,000 miles in that eight-week period.
That is so amazing. Now the corps that make this up, how many are there now? I know there's sort of the premier group and then sort of the secondary feeder group, if you will.
Yeah, we have two classes.
Well,
actually three technically. I'll explain. World mm-hmm. class is the top groups, 22 of them. 23 of them that tour significantly in that eight-week period. Then we have an open class that doesn't tour quite as much,
mm-hmm.
Makes it a little bit accessible for young people to participate and almost hold down a job. And then we have an international class, and this year we're going to have two groups from international coming over here.
Okay, and the kids that make these up now. Each of the corps is essentially its own not-for-profit. It's not affiliated directly with a university or a high school, but the kids that make it up are often from marching bands from high schools and colleges around the country.
That's correct, yeah. And they are they will audition,
mm-hmm.
especially for the top groups. We had over 8,000 young people audition for essentially 3,000 spots.
Okay.
So there's a lot of interest. The talent is just amazing. Average age is somewhere around 19. And you could liken it to club sports. It's the very best of all the schools coming together, if you will. And putting together a program that tours.
And it is a competition. I mean, the World Championships that take place, again, in August here in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Stadium is a competition.
Yeah, it is highly competitive. And if you can judge an apple against an orange, we try to put science to that.
Great mix of course, the color guards and the drums and the brass as well. Let's talk to our two participants here. Leanne, both of you, Leanne and Joseph, you're with the Crossman. Leanne, you're in the color guard, and Joseph, you play baritone, is that
correct?
That's correct.
Yep.
Cool. So you've both been doing this a while now.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, because I've heard these stories about, you know, this crazy schedule of, you know, every day practicing, like, you know, starting at 5 in the morning and sleeping on gymnasium floors and eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches all summer and getting sunburned. You guys must really love this. Why do you choose to do this during the summer?
I originally was introduced to it by my parents. My mom mm-hmm. marched, and so did my dad. And I just kind of grew up actually within DCI pretty much too, and just kind of grew into it and grew to love it. And it's crazy, but it gives you pretty much a huge life-changing experience.
And you've been doing this, Leanne, now for how many years?
This is my eighth year.
Your eighth year. And so this year you actually age out, is that correct?
Yeah.
That it's at a certain point, what's the age, is it?
It's 21, but if your birthday is after June 1st, you can age out when you're 22.
Okay, so you get to do it this summer, but then at that point you have to...
This is my extra year.
Okay, so. Awesome. Yeah. And Joseph, how about you?
This is my fourth year at the Crossman and mm-hmm. fifth year total. I marched Revolution and Open Class Corps prior to coming to the Crossman. I got started because my band director in high school had marched Blue Knights back in the late 90s, and I had a friend that had marched the year prior to me. And so they got talking about it, and I got interested, so I started going to camps and been downhill ever since.
Cool. Now, you're also in ROTC, correct?
Correct. I am in the Army ROTC at the University of Texas in Austin.
So is there a connection with what you're doing there and what you're doing during the summer at all? Or?
A lot of the leadership, I hold a leadership position at the Crossman. I'm the section leader. And mm-hmm. so a lot of the leadership skills I learned in the Army ROTC program, I correlate to the Crossman, how I run the section.
Okay. Now, tell me a bit about the Crossman, because each of the corps really has sort of its own personality, its own style of movement and of music. What is it that defines the Crossman?
Well, I guess the Crossman for a while have always been known as like a huge jazz corps within the DCI corps, I guess. And we kind of strayed away from that for a while, but this year's show really brings it back to our roots and really a crowd-pleasing, entertaining show, and that's kind of sort of what people know us for, being a very entertaining drum corps.
Okay. Now, the first show that you guys have is actually tonight here in Indianapolis. We're recording this June 21st, longest day of the year, the first of many long days for you guys, and then you'll be back here in August. But what can you tell me about the show tonight? What are you doing?
The show we're performing this summer is called Renewal, and the show to bring back, like what she was talking about, the Crossman name that the Crossman have strayed away from over the past several years. And so the show's designed to kind of show the fans and show the DCI community that we can go back to where DCI came from, and especially our own personal roots.
Okay. What's some of the music that's being featured?
We're playing Maynard Ferguson's Spinning Wheel.
Cool.
And
okay.
Leonard Cohen's Holly are our two main charts in the show.
Wow. Okay. And this is basically, that routine is the routine that you'll be touring with this summer and competing with. Is that that basically it? Tell me about the process for learning that routine. Like, when do you guys get the music? When do you get the diagrams? I mean, I know it's like crazy all in computers now, how they chart out all the different maneuvers and stuff.
For the horn line side, we start getting our music in November, December when we're auditioning, and
wow.
we'll start learning it and then while we're auditioning. And then as the off season progresses towards move-in day in May, we learn more and more of the music. And so by the time we move in May, we'll have the whole show music memorized by the time we get there. And then starting in...
Well, so even before you guys all get together, you've got the music down pretty
yes,
much.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
So and then also in March and April, we start learning drill. We'll get the pictures, as you say, for the field, and it's on a big grid, and you have like a little X on the chart, and you just go your little X and follow that around. We start that in March to April.
Okay. And so, I mean, you're like just right out of school, essentially, as soon as school ends, or sometimes it overlaps a bit?
Usually we're in school and we go on weekends during mm-hmm. the off season, and then in May, college kids get out early May, high school kids get out late May to June.
Okay. How about for you, Leanne? How's the process work?
For color guard, it's a little different. We have one camp in December, mm-hmm. and then
a lot of us participate in Winter Guard International, so we don't come back until May. And so we normally start spring training right off the bat with learning the drill and immediately learning our choreography because we're like months behind the horn line. But we actually worked it out well this year that we had like ABC days where it would be like the first day you'd learn drill, the second day you'd learn your work, and then the third day you'd put it all with the core, and it actually worked out really well. This is probably the first time that we're on tour at our first show with a complete finished product.
And ready
drill
to go.
And choreography, uniforms, flags, everything's ready. So
cool. So from this point on, I mean, what's a typical day like for you guys? I mean, because you'll be doing something like, what, 30 shows between now and August?
Yeah.
Generally, when we're in spring training, we're moved in the same location for about 3 to 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
A typical day was wake up at 7:15. We would stretch and run for a while. We would eat breakfast for an hour, and then we have a four-hour block. Then we'd eat lunch, and then we have a four-hour block. We eat dinner, and then we have a three-hour block. And then we have a snack, and then go to sleep. And then we wake up and do the whole thing all over again for 3 to 4 weeks.
Wow. I mean, I know it's so intense, and obviously a lot of great friendships develop over the years and people you work with and stuff. But how do you, you know, before DCI moved to Indianapolis, I didn't know a lot about drum corps. And you know, I've learned a lot since then, and I'm just amazed by, you know, the musical talent, the dance talent, the athleticism of what you guys do and throughout the summer. But, you know, like for friends of yours who don't quite get it, how do you explain it to them, like why you do it or what it's all about?
I kind of sum it up with we're pretty much a professional marching band.
Mm-hmm.
It's my only way to really word it correctly so people don't get confused. And then I always say that I'm with a touring group that just tours the country, and it makes me kind of sound like a rock star, so it's kind of awesome.
That is kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Joseph?
I say the professional marching band thing.
Yeah.
And then I'll also say that for people that don't know marching band that much, I'll say for traveling with a performing ensemble throughout the summer.
Okay.
Probably the closest we can get to.
Yeah.
So now, I mean, you know, once you guys age out, do you have plans for, you know, sort of how you continue this experience or, you know, just become like super boosters or?
I think for next season, I know for sure I'm going to vacation a lot. And
yeah.
Then hopefully maybe come
first
back.
Summer off in what, 8 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then hopefully maybe come back as either an admin or even in a like color guard technician position. That would be ideal to me.
Cool. Joseph?
As for me, I have to work on my military career starting as soon as I'm done with this summer. I have to go next year and get assessed as leadership qualities and such. So I'll be working on that next couple of years.
Cool. So who's your big competition this year?
That's a good question.
I know you haven't, you know, seen everyone's routine yet, you know, because they're just going to see yours tonight and stuff. But, like, you know, based on maybe last year, like, who are you guys really looking forward to going up against?
I'll say Madison. That's who we really want to see us compete against and compete against well.
Yeah. How about you?
Probably, like, the Madison spirit, whole bottom six half of the the rankings would be.
Cool.
Ideal competition.
Now, as I mentioned, you know, here we are June 21st, and you're in Indianapolis. Where do you guys go next? I know, I mean, at some point you end up in Texas before you end up here in Indianapolis, or you're maybe in Atlanta. That's what it is, Atlanta. I mean, you're kind of like all over the country.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, do you know a little bit of your schedule? Or?
Roughly, we come up from Texas. We're going to do a little Midwest tour around these next couple of days. We'll move to the Northeast, then we will travel south, back down to Texas, go east again towards Atlanta and the Florida area, and then come back up north to Indy and Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Cool. Cool. Do you guys get to Erie at all this summer? I know that the drum corps gets there. I wasn't sure if you guys
We usually do, so I'm pretty sure we will this year also.
Awesome. Oh, that's where I'm from. That's why I ask.
Okay.
Because I know you guys are there every year. So,
mm-hmm.
Dan, this has just got to be a crazy and exciting time for you, of course, during the summer, getting ready for, you know, as the season kicks off, getting ready for the championships. One thing in the last couple minutes we have here real quick I want to ask you about, this year also adding a whole new element to this, and this is an arts parade the drum corps is bringing to Indianapolis.
Yeah. The Celebrate Indy Arts Parade is a new addition to the championship format, and it's going to happen that Saturday, August 13th, on 11 a.m. downtown, and the usual parade route around the war memorials there and so forth. And it's going to be fantastic with over 30 marching musical units, which most parades can't get to, even the big-name parades.
Yeah.
And integrated in between are going to be local Indianapolis and Indianapolis area arts organizations who have signed up to participate and kind of show their creativity. And it's an opportunity for the arts community to come together and say, hey, look at us. This is a great thing that we have in the community.
Yeah.
Let's everybody, mom, dad, kids, pack up, come on down and enjoy this celebration of the arts.
Great way to wrap up the summer, and also an excellent way to kick off what is traditionally the beginning of the arts season, too,
exactly,
for the local
right.
community as well. So again, and that parade that's on Saturday the 13th, that's going to be going down Pennsylvania Street around the Legion Mall and such. That's a free event and featuring, you know, many of the drum corps groups.
Right.
Looking forward to that. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and
we're
stuff.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, and then of course that whole the days leading up to that, and then that weekend are the finals and the World Championships for drum corps.
Yeah, this will be our third year at Lucas Oil Stadium, and we're really looking forward to that. We're really settled into that venue for our World Championships and Indianapolis in general. The fans are coming to really love this location.
Cool. Well, let me ask one last question here of Joseph and Leanne. What's it like for you guys performing in Lucas Oil?
It's a huge venue. It's one of the biggest ones we perform in. It's nice to see all the people that come out. The stands are mostly full, and it's a nice feel. It's just a nice venue to perform in.
Leanne?
It's pretty cool. It's almost like an out-of-body experience almost, just because you're overwhelmed by how big it is.
Uh-huh.
But from a color guard standpoint, I like it because there's a roof, so it's not windy.
Yeah, yeah, sure. There you go.
But no, it's really, really nice. It's definitely an experience to perform there, one that you remember.
Travis DiNicola with Dan Acheson, Executive Director and CEO of Drum Corps International, and with color guard performer Leanne Fields and baritone player Joseph Burrell, both of the Crossman Drum Corps. The World Championships for Drum Corps International take place at Lucas Oil Stadium from August 11th through the 13th, and this year that also includes a parade on Saturday the 13th celebrating the arts in Indianapolis. For more information, visit dci.org. That's dci.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4 when I get a preview of the Hoosier Salon's annual exhibit.
I'll find out what happens when Cumberland Arts goes to market.
And I'll chat with Rita Kahn about her latest play. And of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 or to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting Summer at the Palladium now through August. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.